The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Friday, the 11th of September, 2020. On the podcast today, Dave Wall, Managing Director of 88 Energy, explains the positive final petrophysical interpretation of the Charlie 1 well in Alaska. Also on the podcast, John Peters, Managing Director of Strategic Minerals, provides an update on their core operations. Paul Hill, full-time investor and equity analyst, gives his view on the market and also talks about the following companies: Clearstar, Equals, MPAC, On the Market, Roslyn Data, Speedy Hire, and Vistry. And Russ Mould, investment director at stockbroker AJ Bell, talks about the possible reasons for the sell-off in tech stocks in the US recently. And as always, at the end of the podcast, I have two lists for you: the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs. You can see top 10 versions of both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk. We can see a lot of other content right there, and our COVID-19 index. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Dave Wall, Managing Director of 88 Energy. That's 88 ticker. Dave, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Justin.
Yeah, and share prices jumped a little bit today on the announcement of final petrophysical interpretation at Charlie 1, and we'll get into that because there's a table in there with lots of numbers and figures, but generally it seems very positive. So before we do that, Dave, as always, for people maybe not familiar with 88 Energy, can you just summarize the business, please?
Yeah, we're an oil and gas company exploring on the North Slope of Alaska, which is a pretty oily place, as most people probably understand. We've been there for 5 years and we haven't quite cracked it yet, although this gets us pretty close, I would say. And, you know, we're just getting closer and closer every day to actually hitting it out of the park. And this result, as I'll explain, is pretty significant. So we've got a number of assets, and this is related to one of those assets.
Yeah, so this is Charlie 1, and it says your final petrophysical interpretation using sophisticated laminated sand analysis. So it upgrades the net hydrocarbon pay. So explain that and what you found there.
Yeah, so in broad terms, basically what we're saying here in terms of the hydrocarbon pay is the part of the reservoir that's filled with oil that we think we can produce from. So that's really what hydrocarbon pay is. Mm-hmm. And laminated sand analysis is a relatively new in terms of its application and understanding, although the concept has been around for a long time, where you have, you know, shales interbedded with sands, and the shale itself is not very productive. However, the sands in the middle, but wedged in between the shale layers, can be quite good quality and hold oil, which is what you want. And if you have quite a number of laminations together, when the logs that you typically would use when you evaluate a well, when you drill, they will show you something that doesn't look very good because it averages out the shale and the sand. However, if you can run a sophisticated logging suite and then do a laminated sand analysis, which is something that we can now do, and we designed our logging suite at the Charlie 1 well specifically so that we could, because we do have some experience in these laminated sands, not all positive. And one example of that was Winx, where what we'd hoped to see was laminated sands, but we didn't see them. We saw instead shale and clay dispersed within the sandstone. However, at Charlie 1, what we do see is laminated sands. And when you run the analysis, and this was borne out from the tools we ran in the hole, mm-hmm. but also the cores that we took and have been analysing in the labs, you know, since we drilled the well earlier this year. And what it shows is that the quality of the sands wedged in between these shale layers is actually pretty good, and the sands are full of oil. And when you put a small simulation or frack on these formations, it connects up all the sands together because it breaks through the shale layers, separating the sands from each other, and they generally produce at pretty good rates. And there are a number of analogs globally where that occurs. And that's what you know, this analysis tells us that we've got here. And it's a very thick interval in the CB. We know that the oil saturations are very good, and the prosodies are okay. They're not fantastic, but they're okay. So we're in a pretty good spot to take this project to the next stage, which is to get someone else in to drill another well with us, similar to what we did earlier this year. However, for various reasons, you know, that was disappointing for the partner that we had at the time, and they walked away because they were more interested in the Turok formation, which instead of flowing oil, it actually flowed some condensate gas, which is not as prospective on the slope because there's no market for gas. You can commercialize it, and that's something we're also working on. But the focus really, which you can kind of see from looking at the table, you know, we've got much more net pay in the CB than we do in the Turok. And that just means, you know, there it's going to be more oil there. And these were the most extensive of the targets that we had mapped prior to drilling. So we were hoping that we'd see something good in the CB because they are very big. And now that hope has borne out.
Excellent, you know, and what we see is
very good.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so what else is going on then, Dave?
So the other thing that, you know, has happened relatively recently, which we've talked about and there's been press releases, is we acquired another company, XCD Energy or Exceed Energy, and we've been working on permitting and planning at that acreage and also a farm out for drilling Q1 next year, which is only around 6 months away, and that's on a billion barrel target, which is two prospects, which one well will be able to hit both, and we'll drill one or two wells on that next year. All the planning for that's going really well, but we're pretty busy. And then finalizing this work, which will go into a, you know, the mapping exercise that I kind of referred to, and these being extensive targets, we need to fine tune that using the data that we now have from the well. And then once we've done that, we can integrate the petrophysics, which is, you know, how thick the reservoir is and how much oil is in it, with how big the prospects or discoveries actually are in size, and that actually that will give you the amount of oil that we think we have in the ground, and then we can determine how much of it's recoverable. And that's kind of the point at which you can start to put a value on some of these things, and hopefully there'll be big numbers and the value will be a large number again, and that will be reflected in the share price.
Yeah. And so looking forward in my head now, I'm just thinking of news flow. And so map that out for us, if you could. Let's say 3-6 months, what you're likely to see.
Yeah, so we've been doing some technical work on stuff that the Exceed guys had started but not finished, and that's on the Peregrine project where we're drilling the well early next year, and that's looking pretty good. So we need to again fine tune and package that up, and then once we do that, that'll be something we'll be able to put into the data room. And if it's significant enough, which we hope it will, we'll announce it to the market as well as part of our continuous disclosure obligations. But directionally, that's looking positive. And then, as I said, we'll integrate this data from Charlie 1 into the seismic. We'll do our seismic mapping. We'll take that to an independent estimator and get a prospective or potentially contingent resource. We'll see on the discoveries that we've made in the Charlie 1 well. And then I think it will be about rig contracts and, you know, farm out of the project Peregrine into the end of the year. And then next year we'll be, you know, drilling within a couple of months at the project Peregrine prospects.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, Dave. Well, summary of all of it, okay? So in three bullet points, if you can, as always, if someone's liking the sound of this in a release, but are not yet following the company on Vox, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button and add 88 Energy to their watch list, please.
Well, I think probably the best reason to buy any stock is I think we're comparatively cheap, not just compared to a peer group, but also historically. And the reasons for that, I think, are relatively obvious and understood, but they might not be the right reasons. So, for example, when we drilled Charlie 1, you know, we had what looked like a disappointing result on paper. There was also COVID had just hit, the oil price had crashed. And now, actually, as it turns out, Charlie 1's not disappointing at all. It's actually a very positive result. So the share price may have dropped because of the oil price and COVID, but should not have dropped for the well. So it should bounce back for the well result. And then, you know, hopefully the world will be recovering from COVID and the oil price will rebound as well with that. So you would say that this is a good time to buy an underloved stock, which I'd say that we are. And then, as I've outlined, we have lots of news flow coming up. And finally, you know, companies like us that are on the cusp of drilling, you know, be it, albeit 6 months, which can be a long time for some people, but it's probably the right time to buy ahead of a drilling event. You know, the share price invariably goes up in the lead up to those events. So you'd better, it's better to buy it before that happens than just after it happens.
Marvellous stuff. Dave, good to chat to you. And hopefully, like you say, lots of news flow. Hopefully we'll be chatting in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
I'm sure we will. Thanks, Justin. Appreciate it.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Peters, Managing Director of Strategic Minerals, SML. Ticker John, good to chat to you. It's been a while.
Yes, it's been a while, Justin. It has.
Well, COVID has messed, you know, it's put a lot of companies on pause, but there's a lot going on in the background. I know, like we're just chatting there, you're saying how busy you are, but sometimes you just can't release RNSs all the time just for the sake of it. So there's lots going on, but we're going to, listen, we're getting to all of it right now. But before we do, as always, for someone who hasn't heard you on the podcast, John, just briefly summarise Strategic, if you could.
Yeah, look, Strategic's a bit unique in being a minnow or junior miner that's actually profitable. We've got an underlying cash flow business that comes out of our magnetite stockpile we've got access to in the US, and that provides us income not only to cover our costs but provides us a profit generally. Last year we wrote off our exploration ones, but that left us two other major projects, both of them I believe are significant value. One, of course, is our copper project in South Australia, the Lee Creek Copper Mine, which we've just, and I'll talk a little bit later on about what we've just announced yesterday. But also there's that mine, which we hope will be in production next year on full scale. And the other one, of course, is our very large juggernaut, as I keep referring to it, down in Cornwall, the tin tungsten mine at Redmore. Which, again, there's a bit of news about what we're doing there as well. They are three very strong pillars of value, which I believe are in our company and are setting us up. But we'll get into that a bit later.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's start with Lee Creek then, because you released some news yesterday on that, an update. Take us through what's happening there, John, if you could.
Yeah, look, it's as you know, in the past, we've actually restarted some of the heaps at Lee Creek to get the copper out. And in fact, that was just as a test type thing. We then had to go back. We've got a different area, Paltridge North, where we're accessing the copper from. We had to get an environmental program through. That's what the PEPR is, a program of environmental protection. It's a process whereby you go through, you put in drafts initially. They basically go through the drafts, get out anything that might be a project killer for you. And then when they're ready, they tell you to submit in full. And usually once you submit in full, it's probably a month or 2 months off in finishing. Okay, so that for that reason, we had earlier put in some draft. We got some info back saying, look, you need to fix up this and probably put it back as draft. But then they looked at it again and said, no, look, put it in as full. So we've put it in as full now so that we'd expect that before the end of this year, we'll have a full approval on the PEPR, which means that we're in a position where we should be able to get into full production next year. Now, the only proviso, and I'll be very honest with this, is that, as I always am, is this question about we've got to make sure we've got the money to get the working capital up to start with. The Lee Creek, the deposit involved, has a high strip ratio to start with, which means that for 2 or 3 months, we've virtually got to dig out material above the deposit and get to it, and then put it on heap leaches, put acid over it, then put it through Kennecott cones to produce what they call a copper cement, for which we've got an offtake agreement in place. The thing that's been outstanding for us, of course, is the fact that the copper price has gone where we always thought it would be, and in fact, if anything, it's looking to go further up. And one of the wonderful things about it is that that access to most of the copper at that particular deposit is done within about a year and a half, 2 years. And improves a full payback and start to get you going. So There's that deposit. There's another one, Linda Lorna Dune, on the side as well. So we've really got quite a very profitable project on an IRR basis. Not a huge project, but likely produces millions of dollars a year in profits.
At the moment,
we're mainly, though, looking to see what we can do about bringing maybe another party to joint venture it with us so that we can bring the capital in. And that's probably a reflection of the fact that this isn't, I don't believe this is being properly valued in US share price.
Yeah. So, excellent. So, approval hopefully before the end of the year, then full scale production next year, subject to finance. So, it's looking good, like you say, and the project's becoming more robust as the cotton price. Let's be honest. People have been talking about the cotton price rising for a long time, and a lot of us think, why isn't it going up? But I mean, I think it's only a matter of time before it really starts to power ahead, because it's got to, hasn't it? Yeah. Really? Demand.
The one thing to consider is the fact that it probably has gone a bit quicker because COVID has caused a few closures down in South America, right? But the beauty about what we've got is the fact that we can easily turn on and off the tap in production or not. It's a low-cost maintenance, et cetera, et cetera. And realistically, the way it's looking at the moment, we're going to be well above the numbers we'd forecast. We will, towards the end of this month, beginning of next month, come up with a little bit of an update on that, because we've actually got someone reviewing the capital cost of going to the next deposit, Linda Lorna Dune, and hopefully that'll be out towards the end of the month. So when we do that, we'll also do a review on the financials to produce to the market, so they can have a look at what our understanding is. And with that, for example, when we operated the heap leaches earlier, we've actually been able to refine some of our assumptions and found that some of them have been a bit more conservative than we need to be. So we're actually looking at, as I said, a very profitable, very attractive investment.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's Lee Creek there, copper. And let's move over to Redmore then. What's happening there, John?
Well, Redmore is, as you know, it's a very large tin tungsten deposit. I think importantly, we've proven up a financial model that works at the moment, and effectively is only on one side of the valley. On the other side of the valley, there's also known workings, etc., that have in the past, particularly with tin, and there's an opportunity probably to deposit, to double the resource if we want to. What we've done is, the second part of this is, every time I've invested in into this project, the market's paid us either no regard or effectively has indicated they think we've just wasted our money, which I know is definitely not the case. Instead, what we've said is, well, how do we really make this best then for our shareholders at the same time? Mm-hmm. We bought in a consulting firm that had worked heavily and was recommended to us by RCF, NRG Capital. They've been very good. They've highlighted a few things for us, just changed our view a bit. Made us realise that probably it's a very big deposit, and it is a world-class asset as far as I'm concerned. And this world-class asset probably needs a bit more grunt behind it. So we're actually intending over this next, to probably before the end of the year, to run expressions of interest on it and probably bring in another player or a larger player even, so that it becomes not a question of will this ever happen, but when is it going to happen? There's so much talk down in Cornwall about projects. I believe this is by far the best project there is down there. And I know I'm biased, et cetera, but the truth is we've proven up a substantial economic resource, right? It's only inferred at the moment, but it's basically a resource that says to you, you can do a mine from here. It's got a virtually a three-level resource in the fact that there's tin, tungsten and copper deposits, all of reasonable size. And what it really needs is it needs to be taken seriously. And there are a few players around at the moment, particularly at the larger end of town, that are looking for these sort of projects. So we've been quite encouraged by the feedback we've had from NRG. And I am really looking forward to running the expressions of interest, because then I think it will really show to people what the board has known all along, about the value that's inherent in Renmore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And as far as tin and tungsten is concerned, what's the market like for that at the moment, you know, for those commodities?
Well, it's picked up again in pricing. But again, let's not forget tungsten's been identified, particularly the US, have identified tungsten as a strategic mineral.
Mm-hmm.
And that's partly because the Chinophobia that's occurring at the moment is driving people to say, well, tungsten's mainly produced at the moment in China,
mm-hmm.
and many people want to protect themselves in case the regime decides to close its doors or do whatever, etc. So we're actually quite keen on that, and there's a lot of talk around it. Tin's been doing very well, and as you know, a couple of years ago, I think it was Rio Tinto commissioned an MIT study that showed that tin was probably the metal that was going to most benefit from the move into the battery world for electronic vehicles, et cetera, et cetera. And I've got to say, when it comes to that, copper doesn't do too bad either.
Yeah, absolutely. No. So you're playing in the right ballpark, really, John, aren't you?
Well, that was the board's strategy. The board's strategy was to pick out resources that we felt we're going to benefit from price rises over the next 3 to 5 years. The thing is, I think the price rises are occurring more in 2 to 3 years rather than 3 to 5.
Yeah. Just looking back at your RNSs here, your interims should be out soon, shouldn't they?
Yeah, look, in the next couple of weeks we should have our interims out. As you can imagine, you know, if you also notice, our sales have been going all right at Cobra. Cobra, we've been organically moving it along. We're getting nice cash flow out of it. We get good profits. We have used cash flow in the past to try and pay off some of the cost of acquiring Redmore, the other balance of Redmore. But as time goes on, that's going to make life a bit easier in that regard for us. And, you know, basically, as you know, we tend to only raise if we've got something acquisitive. Our last raise in June was just to pay off that balance of Redmore. We don't go out and raise to keep the lights on. We use Cobra for that. So we're in a pretty good spot with that regard. So, and again, that's what differentiates us from most other of those companies on AIM is the fact that we're profitable.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff. Well, John, as always, I know you probably haven't forgotten, I'd like to get the three reasons to get people following you, if you can. So three reasons, if someone's listening right now.
Yes, no, I haven't forgotten.
If they like the sound of the progress,
I've done my homework.
Yeah, go for it. Three reasons why someone should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Okay, so basically, I'd say obviously value. I don't believe at the moment when you're making a profit on underlying profit on Cobra that the value should be where it is. At the moment, I don't believe they're valuing our copper project at all, yet copper prices have gone up so much that project is becoming so attractive it's not funny. The other one, of course, is they're not valuing Redmore. So value, to me, as you know, we went as high as 3p about 2 or 3 years ago. I don't believe we should. Well, you'll see a rush back to that in the very short term, but I do believe that brings me to the second point, which is timing. If you look at it at the moment, we're getting ready to start moving on, getting a final out on. Getting a final approval from the government in South Australia for the Pepper, so that means we're ready to shovel ready at Lee Creek, and also we're going to be running the expressions of interest. Now, all of that's happening before the end of this year, right? Which means that if you don't get in time, you might miss the rush, and I believe the rush is quite large that could occur on our share price. I don't think it's going to take a lot to move our share price up a fairly substantial amount, which probably brings us to the last point, and that's upside potential. So here I'm saying, one, is on a share price basis, I believe the ability for this to double, maybe even triple from where it is, isn't too hard. And also at the same time, I think the projects that we've got, both Redmore and Lee Creek, have got huge upside potentials that aren't factored in even into our economics, right? So we've got lots and lots of upside. We've got a cash flow underlying, so we're not raising for cash flow purposes. And basically, We're around the corner from a couple of very large announcements. So I think there's pretty good reason to buy our stock.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff. John, good to chat to you, and no doubt we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Don't wait so long next time, OK?
Okay, Justin. Thank you very much,
man. The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Paul Hill, equity analyst and full-time investor. You right, fella?
Yeah, morning, Justin, and welcome back from your holes.
Yeah, thanks. I keep repeating myself, but do you know, my phone went dead. And so generally, you know, when you're at the pool or something, there's anything I look at to check on the stocks and stuff. My phone went dead for like the last, I think, 3 or 4 days. More than that, 4 or 5 days. So I wasn't really in touch with it all. And I didn't realise
it was... I bet it was bliss, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, do you know what? I said that. Problem switching off on holidays, you know, first 4 days.
And that surprises me.
Yeah. First 4 days, my wife says, you're a moaning old git. What, next time we're not, you're not coming on holidays with us.
Again.
I know. I mean, that's why she married me. But then I get into it, you know, for the last few days, and then all of a sudden I get bored again then. But a bit of a sell-off. But do you reckon any concerns? You know,
not really, no. I mean, I think it's really sort of big picture concerns. I mean, if you actually look at the UK equity markets, it's been very much a sort of like lackluster and sort of dropping slightly, and particularly in the sort of the UK-focused stock. So your house builders, your infrastructure providers, your banks, etc. Anything which is, and your restaurants and stuff. And largely that is because of fears escalating in terms of the, you know, the infection rates just recently, and also Brexit. And it hasn't helped, obviously. We've got sort of, you know, heated markets out in NASDAQ, so that general sort of sentiment. But it's just short term, in my view. I mean, I think this whole infection rate worry will be, we're going to get through it. As I've said for the last 3 months, it isn't going to be a major, you know, major problem. It's just precautionary what the government announced last night in terms of introducing the maximum of 6 people for gatherings from Monday onwards. And it's going to allow the schools and the universities to get back. And it isn't going to particularly hit the economy. So I'm pretty happy in terms of the big picture in the UK economy. But investors are getting, you know, just a bit concerned, a bit worried, taking a bit off the table. I mean, just to give you another data point, we had Vistry put out its interims actually this week, and it gave a pretty strong outlook. In fact, the CEO said things like 20% up number of orders, prices are very robust, and we haven't seen these conditions for years. And that's what he was saying, and then the shares went down 5%. So it just shows you that, you know, it is definitely the glass is half empty at the moment in terms of investors. So if your portfolio like mine is just trading down slightly, don't worry. In my view, you know, hold what good quality companies, keep them there, and we're going to change. And big picture wise, again, I hope and I think we will see, you know, a vaccine or some positive news on the FDA front, the approval front, over the next few weeks. And if that occurs, it's going to change sentiment hugely. So those stocks which are down, you know, sort of like 10-15% just recently, particularly in the small cap space, don't worry, they'll come back up.
Mm. Yeah, I guarantee you, right, there'll be a vaccine before the election.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, well, it's definitely one before the election. Yeah, but I actually think there's going to be, you know, we'll actually have...
No, but I think that's linked. I think that's only a coincidence. It's that I think genuinely Trump, behind the scenes, is doing everything he can to say, you know, and he'll put that down to him in some way. He'll say, see, I've got a vaccine before, you know, because so that will help him a hell of a lot, you know, in the vote, I think. So, house builders and stuff. What was that same Competition and Markets Authority announcement? I didn't really read it. I saw it pop up on most of the house builders. What's that about?
Well, in 2017, a lot of the house builders at that time were building homes, selling the freehold to not the owner of the home. They were actually selling the house with the actual building itself as a leasehold property, and then they'd pay a peppercorn rent to the actual landlord who they'd actually sold the freehold to. They'd split the transactions to increase margins and to reduce the cost to the actual homeowner. Anyway, the competition authority said, look, we can't have this going on. There's lots of complaints. And companies took relevant provisions. Like, for instance, Taylor Wimpey took £130 million provision back 4 years ago. So, and I think what all this is just historical issues that really just need to be finally put to bed. I thought they'd already had been put to bed. Anyway, I'm not massively worried. The market didn't seem to be particularly worried either. We'll wait and see how that plays out. I mean, more importantly, what is the housing market doing? And you saw it again today. We had Speedy Hire, who had the rental equipment hire business. It was saying that actually it's now seen in September its utilization rate's pretty much flat, only very slightly down year on year, and revenues month to date are only 8% down, and they were 80% down at the peak of the trough of COVID back in March and April. So it's come back a lot way. We're not quite there, but we're very close to there. And again, I was on a call with Michaelmerce, the Brick Boys, earlier this week, and they were saying, their order flow, they had a really strong July, and August has tracked up in a similar sort of number. So the whole house building, infrastructure and construction industry is coming back, which is a major driver for jobs and the economy. So if we actually have to sort of close down a few sort of outdoor events and stop youngsters meeting and effectively potentially transferring COVID between them, then that's not a major issue. But the competition authority, as you say, I'm not massively worried about it. The market didn't seem massively worried, and I think it's just linked to legacy issues.
Yeah, and it's very buoyant. I mean, look at I don't know if you saw On the Market came up with figures again,
yeah.
and they're beating record monthly site visits and ads and leads per advertiser, so it's looking good for them.
If you actually think about that, okay, what the macro economists are saying is that we're going to get this peak demand, pent up demand, etc., and then we're going to see. And can you believe this? We're going to see a 7.5% reduction in house prices, having just gone up by 2% month on month and 5% per annum. We're going to see a 7.5% reduction on a per annum basis. I just don't see it. Now, if you actually then think, okay, what does that mean? Well, the macro economists are actually quite influential. And most of those forecasts have been baked into all the banking provisions that the likes of Lloyds put together in Q2. Can you really see them? If that happens, yes, they are going to have to spend those provisions, because I think they're probably right. But I personally cannot see house prices declining by 7.5%, from in the final quarter. I mean, it just seems absolutely ludicrous. In fact, I actually think it's going to track a similar trajectory is the US housing market, which has continued to increase. And why is that occurring? Because we've had so much fiscal stimulus in terms of printing new money, it's meant we're getting an asset price inflation, not only in the stock market. We haven't seen it obviously in the old economy stocks and the value plays in the FTSE, but we've seen it out in the States. We're going to see it in hard assets. We've seen it in gold. The house prices, in my view, and I'm not an absolute expert in it, they're not going down. They're going up.
Yeah. They're very rarely go down anyway. They dip a little bit, don't they? But then they don't. You're never going to get a massive sell-off and have 20-25% drops in house prices unless something cataclysmic happens. But yeah, I don't see them ever. I think it'll be a steady increase generally year on year, for years.
I think we're going to be fine. And this, as I say, the recent sort of sell-off and this recent sort of move down by the markets, particularly in the medium and small cap sector in the UK focused stocks, in my view, don't worry about it. House builders are trading at ridiculous valuations. I mean, as I say, Taylor Wimpey's on 1.1x book. That's why the CEO and the chairman bought hundreds of thousands of pounds of shares of it recently. That's why the CFO of Lloyd's bought a million shares when he, a month back. Mm. Because the economists have put together these forecasts 3 or 4 months ago, and I think just out of date. They're wrong.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Any other bits of news from maybe small cap stocks out there you've been...
There's definitely one which I think people should have a good look at, which has reported results last week. On its interims, is a company called MPAC. And the reason why I raise it, because it's one of the world's best high-speed production equipment and packaging machinery automation supplier to the healthcare primarily, but also into food and beverage and pharmaceutical sector. It's headquartered in the UK, but trades internationally 85% of its sales. Put out some. It's been hit by COVID at the start of the year, not surprisingly, because it operates in capital goods. But it's getting the long-term tailwinds behind it are the secular growth of Industry 4.0, which is basically the digitization of smart factories that we're going to high speed and individual orders and packaging for businesses and for consumers and households. But it's got resilience because it focuses on healthcare, food and beverage, and pharmaceuticals. And what it said in its interims last week was that it actually seen a really strong start to the second half. And its first half results weren't bad. Operating margins were still 7%. Okay, revenues were down sort of 20%, but against a tough year, a tough comparative. And, we're going to continue to see sort of improvements in the second half. And I could actually see 2021 really shaping up strongly because the US economy, the capital goods, if you actually look at some of the PMI indices, they're really flashing, green. They're up mid-single digits year on year because businesses, they're doing two things. One is that they're really ramping up production of, food and it's basically tins and all this sort of like these products. But also you've got this onshoring trend from the likes of China, which is bringing back production to the likes of the US. Those things are driving the actual order book. And so when I spoke to the management team, they were pretty buoyant. And then this week, even more, interesting, They got plenty of cash, about £22 million of cash at the half year. They spent $15 million of that buying another sort of a food and beverage and healthcare packaging automation business out in Ohio, Cleveland, called Switchback, which is synonymous and really deep expertise in craft beers. So if you like a pint here, Justin, raise a glass to this acquisition because they bought it at about 7x EBIT, which is dirt cheap. Yeah. The growth is happening in craft beers, as you probably know, because you sort of like buy all these type of beers out. So anyway, I've upgraded my expectations. The reason why I raised it, because I've upgraded my expectations on EBIT and revenues for this year. I think they're well set up for next year for that. And I get a fair value of £3.80. And the shares yesterday were trading at about, I think it was £3. They popped up on the acquisition, which was rightly so. However, what's equally interesting in it is there's some big optionality embedded in the actual company. And when I say optionality, there's majorly two things. And this is what investors, again, should really listen to because they perhaps haven't yet fully understood the story. One, they have 10 acres of spare prime land in Buckinghamshire. That is worth, if they ever get planning permission on it, over £20 million, 20 million shares, £1 a shot. If they get that, I've baked in none of that upside because. But if you believe what Boris is saying and the new planning rule relaxations, then at some point I believe they will use that spare land, which is being used for nothing, to build residential homes. So that could be an extra, £1 per share. And if they get that, then they'll probably just inject it into their pension, and that'll close their pension any pension issues that they ever have. And then the other thing that is really interesting, and again, I think investors should pick up their ears on this one, is that they have quite unique technology, healthcare grade, medical grade equipment and associated software and systems that. Because it's high speed and very nimble, I believe it can actually be used to manufacture the vials or ampules that might well be used to make the billions of doses of vaccine for COVID-19 over the next few years. And I actually think there's a very close match with the technology that they have and the requirements of that manufacturing. Now, if they ever win any of those orders, which could be colossal. There aren't many people who can do this, particularly in healthcare and medicine. Then that's huge optionality. None of that, along with the land, is baked into my £3.80. That's why I say people should have a good look at it.
Did you see that report today saying basically to ship the vaccine around the world with the largest transport challenge ever, apparently? And this is the International Air Transport Association reckons they need the equivalent of 8,000 Boeing 747s to get the vaccine around the world.
It'd be good for the airline industry.
Yeah, they need that at least, don't they? I know, exactly.
Yeah, they do, yeah.
Cool, yeah, so, no, I like Impact. I saw it on the watch list. I did read that acquisition. I thought that seems quite decent acquisition, you know, price-wise, valuation-wise.
Cool. I mean, the synergies, just give you the synergies on Simpac are, you know, again, they're not baked into, sorry, Switchback are not baked into my estimates. And I'll just give you the synergies. Switchback has no presence in Europe. Hey, just basically lift and shift some of the technology straight into Europe where there's a big craft beer industry about the size of the state and growing at a similar level. It has no or very minimal aftermarket support where these margins are much higher. Gross margin for Switchback are about 30%. But we put in aftermarket, which is spares and services, that's sort of 40, 45% margins, hence going to lift the gross margins to the profitability. And it's also, because it's been doing so well in craft beers, it's bumping up against its capacity levels. Again, use some of the capacity that currently is in the MPAC geographical footprint. So again, none of those three very short-term and should be executable synergies, and none of them are baked into my £3.80. So that's all jam, that is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool. Anything else? Any other stocks?
Well, as I've mentioned, I mean, I would be buying MPAC, and the reason why I'm not buying MPAC is simply because I'm trying to increase my exposure in technology and healthcare. Now, whilst you've been away in the sun out in, where was it, Turkey, was it, or something like that?
Yeah, Turkey, yeah.
Whilst you've been on the beach, mate, I've actually been buying some shares. And one company that I've been tracking for some time actually did have some liquidity. And one of the institutions been dropping some shares into the market. So I've been picking some shares up whilst you've been away. The acquisition I've made is in Equals Group, which is formerly the FairFX business.
Yeah.
They were originally created to allow individuals to do cheap foreign currency transactions on a peer-to-peer basis, because when you go into the bank, then I don't know if you, when you were on holiday, etc., every time you use your credit card, you spend 100 quid but pay a tenner on forex fees or on, you know, whatever it is, you know, conversion and stuff like that. Well, they get rid of all of that, and that's where they were born. However, 2 years ago, sensibly, the chief executive and the board decided to pivot from B2C, which is your business to consumer, which is your straight FairX, into more balance, but into a heavier weighting on your B2B, onto the business to business side. And that's gone really well. So their biggest division, the one I think is their crown jewel, is their international payments B2B business. Now, looking at the numbers for this year, they have been hit by COVID, hence the shares have come down. So they've got sort of like four strands to it. They've got the international payments, which I'll come to in a moment, which is basically their, you know, their crown jewel. They have just sort of like banking, bank account operations, expense platform, and then sort of like, you know, consumer retail with cash and basically providing prepaid cards in foreign exchange. But let me concentrate on what I think is the real value driver here, which is international payments to B2B. When I used to work at GKN or Unilever, okay, those are big businesses. We had a big treasury function. We basically employed experts to be able to move money around the world cheaply.
Mm-hmm.
Small, medium-sized companies can't afford that, okay? They can't afford to have experts on 100 grand a shot, basically buying and selling spot, future, and forward contracts for them. What they have done, and I have not seen this before, what they've done is basically allowed smaller companies and medium-sized companies to effectively have a bank grade, cheap, efficient, and very quick and secure foreign exchange and treasury operation that they can then use and leverage on an outsourced basis, on an as-needs basis. So they provide this large corporate style and just, you know, even better than corporate style, treasury function and Forex facility to these small, medium-sized companies who cannot use it. Because what they're currently doing is that they go to their existing bank and then get effectively charged an arm and a leg. I mean, if you as a consumer, yeah, high net worth individual, you try and buy shares in Apple, you're probably going to be charged 0.5% just even on Forex fees. Now, let's just say, for instance, you drop £100,000 into Apple. That's going to cost you £500. Yeah, these guys do it for about, you know, that £3. You know, their average transaction size is £3. So they're so much cheaper and so much more efficient than anybody else. Not surprisingly, because they're offering this outsourced international payments body, which is, say, as good as you're going to get, and allowing access to the small, medium-sized companies. Not surprisingly, their growth is running through, you know, it's going through the roof. And I calculated, and we'll find out the interims in about a week's time, but I believe the organic growth rate for that division is good, is double digits, yeah? Now, if I'm correct on that, then another good sign is that gross margins on that division are over 70%. You put those two things together, and very quickly, you're going to generate huge operating leverage. And in my view, through my calculations, and I'll put the financials, I'll post it after the podcast has been put on, because I think it's fair that everybody gets the same information at the same time. I'll post it online onto LinkedIn. With 70% gross margins, you're going to get huge drop-through rates, and I believe they're going to be break-even on a cash flow basis that this year. Not that they're short of cash. At the half year, they still had £7.7 million of net funds. I think they're going to burn another £3 million in the second half, because they effectively deferred some payments in the first half. But the following year, in 2021, they're going to be the cash flow break-even. And what's also interesting is that they've done all the heavy lifting in terms of building their system and their infrastructure. So they don't have to spend a shed load now on sort of CapEx going forward. So you're going to get this, you know, better, you're going to get increasing top line, and you're going to get sort of like lower costs, hence margin expansion. I mean, that just like, you know, that's the definition of a money tree. So I'm very positive on the stock. The shares traded about 28, 29p on a sort of, I'm just running through, I think it was about 1.6 times EV sales. I mean, that for a fintech, fast-growing business, that is a really good, you know, sort of valuation. So even if you put in bearish estimates, which I have done, conservative ones, of double-digit growth in international payments, and then sort of like a flat line in the B2C and the consumer after from 2022 onwards, I think they'll actually see a big rebound in 2021 in the consumer, because it's just been artificially hit in COVID, because people haven't been able to go on holidays abroad, and haven't, these consumers haven't been able, you know, haven't spent by buying abroad. So you've seen and the expenses business, because corporates haven't been traveling and staying in hotels, has also suffered. But even in COVID, the international business was very resilient. The international payments business was very resilient. So if you put in sort of like conservative estimates, as I do, you still get a blended organic growth rates of high single digits, about 9%. And you eventually, you know, you get 70%, you know, growth, gross margins. And not surprisingly, you track to sort of like, you know, 20% EBIT margins quite quickly, and you're generating a lot of cash. I mean, as I say, my fair value for this stock is over 60p, and that is conservative. So we're looking at sort of, you know, your classic sort of even, you know, Gresham House or Warren Buffett. Buy stocks when they're low, with a view that there's upside here to double your money over sort of 3, 4, 5 years. And I'm going to be a long-term investor. I'm not going to trade these. I'm just going to hold it, because I like the story. And I really like this tipping point that we've reached with the international payments business. I think that is an absolutely fabulous division. And that's why I bought it.
Yeah, well, I had Ian on the podcast quite a few years back, before they sort of pivoted towards, you know, B2B, I think, and a really nice guy, and, you know, he's obviously... And that's when you look at companies, though, when you understand they can evolve and pivot, and that's part of the talent of the management team. So small businesses can do that very quickly, and they obviously are starting to do that, and, yeah, it'd be interesting to see. So the interim results out, what, next week, have they?
I think it's the 22nd, 23rd.
Wednesday 23rd, that's it.
Okay,
yeah.
Wednesday 23rd. Okay. Yeah, so we'll hopefully have him on the, you know, we'll get him in and we'll have a chat. But as I say, if you're going to take anything away from, you know, sort of like Equals, and you can tell I'm quite, you know, positive, and I've got a full position in it, okay? So I haven't just put a couple of bob into it. There's a reason, there's a good size amount of my personal money on this one. This does, one thing to remember, this does effectively a corporate-grade, banking-secure, outsourced, international payments service and banking service for small and medium-sized companies who don't get that. And if they do get it from their banks like, you know, HSBC and Barclays, they get charged an absolute arm and a leg for it. They cannot afford to employ a treasury functionary in themselves. These guys give them that facility to be able to transact cheaply, quickly, and securely, exactly to what their requirements are. And that is in terms of spot rates, future rates, and forward rates. There's a telephone facility which you need to get the specifics of those trades right. And they get the best rates. Rather than actually, if you go to somebody like Barclays, for instance, they'll just give you their own spread and they'll put you through to their own dealers. These guys effectively are brokers for those smaller, high net worth individuals and, you know, small, medium-sized companies. That is why they're going to win.
Yeah, cool. All right. Yeah, hopefully we get Ian in to chat to him. Anything else worth looking at?
No, well, those are the ones I've been doing whilst you're away. So, yeah. And anything on your side? You've been buying anything whilst you're away? Just beers, I suppose.
I have been buying one stock. I'm not going to mention that because I'm going to wait till the results come. And one of the things, you know, when you start buying, you say, I'm a bit early here, I think. I'm a bit early on the turn. And so I'm going to wait to see that. They've got an update coming up very soon, I think the end of September. And I want to see whether that confirms what I think or whatnot. So I'm not going to say anything.
What sector is it in?
I'm not saying.
How big is it?
It's a micro cap. It's a micro cap. So I don't think you'd be interested in it, but I can't like the area. But it's one of the things where, you know, I've done. It's almost like 75% of the research. I'm almost convinced on it, and then I think, hang on, I just want to see what their update is, because of course we've had a really bad couple of months for certain companies. I just want to see how they're faring. And the company's got cash, and it's just interesting. I want to see an update. And if their update is positive, I'll probably do a blog or a video on them. But I just want to see where they start. But I don't want to mention it just because someone jumps in and the update's terrible and the shares go down. So yeah. I don't want to do that.
One thing, I know you and I have both got shares in, worth mentioning. US August jobs payroll report, very strong.
Yes, even Trump was banging on about that. He said we put on 10 million jobs. It's a record. And I thought, well, there's no reaction in ClearStar. I feel like we are. I'm feeling that ClearStar, the share price. I got like most of the time, to be honest, the share prices can tend to lag what's actually happening in the company. Yes. So I'm waiting for an update, positive update, hopefully. You know.
Yeah, they should have the results out interim sometime in September. And I'm with you. Given the backdrop of that, the strong jobs report. I mean, that's the movie that the UK, you know, as a worst case will follow. I.e., such that they've had a spike in the second wave infections. Absolutely no problem at all in hospitalizations and fatalities, really, compared to where it was. They've been out, you know, they've had plenty of spare capacity in hospitals. And the job market and the economy is, you know, coming back very, very strongly. So even as a worst case, if we do get a second spike, don't worry, things are going to carry on.
Yeah. No, and do you know what? It's like I said, you know, we've had the worst sort of, unemployment figures ever around the world, especially in the US where they are based mainly, and yet their last update was quite positive, really, off the back of that, I thought. And the share prices haven't really reacted, so hopefully it'll get some traction. I know there's some interest building because I think there'll be a very active market now, the recruitment market. And you also, isn't Roslyn Data? They got some news out.
Good point. Yeah, I think theirs are coming out again, a similar sort of time as Equals. Actually, they've got their prelims. Let's not consider there's a historics. The balance sheet will be absolutely fine. But I would say look at the outlook, what they're actually saying, what they're trying to do. they should be about, we've talked about before, they should be a major beneficiary going forward of COVID, the digitization, big data, and they operate in that whole sort of like reducing costs for corporates in spend management. So all the tailwinds are behind them. And I can see them doing well in terms of once they can get access into customers, which is what they should be doing now, then the outlook should be good. So let's see what they say. Go forward.
Well, listen, they've hired a poll. That can't be too bad, can it? They've hired a poll to sort of the growth there. And so hopefully you'll deliver like you deliver, Paul.
Yeah, I think the poll, they've actually, Paul Watts, the revenue director, the CRO, I think his name is, is a heavy hitter. He's got fantastic credentials. So.
Yeah, yeah. So, no. But that's, do you know what? Oddly, that's when they said they're raising money, and I said the amazing fundraise at a premium and a big chunk of change as well. And so, said they got good recurring revenue. All they're missing essentially is that growth trajectory. And then they brought this guy in, Paul Watts, who looks like he's the man for the job, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, if you look, he worked, I think it was Cooper Software, who were the industry titan in this. I mean, which says to me that Paul Watts had lots of job offers. It is not a weak recruitment sector in this type of software as a service in big data. He could have gone anywhere, and he chose to come to Rosslyn. Yeah. That says a lot.
Yeah.
An insider of the industry who really knows what he's doing decides the opportunity at Rosslyn is the best one for that. Just says so much about the company and its positioning.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff, Paul. Thanks for that, fella. And we'll speak to you next week.
Yeah, cheers, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Russ Mould, Investment Director at Stockbroker AJ Bell. You all right, Russ?
Good health, I'm pleased to say, Justin. Are you?
Yeah, all good. All good. Good. Yes. You know, I've just come back from holidays. I should be rested. But it's odd. I find it the transition just, you know, from normality to change to trying to relax, I was almost forced to relax because my iPhone got burned out to put in the water.
Oh.
Yeah, put in the water and it didn't survive.
I
couldn't check stocks and stuff like that for a few days.
Well, that's probably good for you.
Yeah, so I'm not too bad. But back into it now. And while I was away, I didn't see that. I was coming back on the Friday when the sell-off started happening on the tech in America.
Yeah, right.
All that. So it's been quite flat until the last few days, apparently, my holiday. But so what is happening? What's going on there, Russ?
The Nasdaq's now in correction territory. So it's down more than 10% from its high. I think it's now dropped four times in 5 days. And so I guess there are three questions to ask yourself now if you've got stuck into Tesla or Facebook or Netflix or Amazon or some of the tech funds or dedicated growth funds and investment trusts that own a lot of these things. They've pulled back as well. I think they've now lost the sextet of Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Alphabet, Netflix, and Microsoft. I think they've lost just over $1 trillion of market cap in the last week, intriguingly, about 12 or 13%. And so you've now got to ask, why the sell-off?
Mm-hmm.
Does it mean that the businesses themselves are now fundamentally different? What has something happened to the companies themselves? And then where do we stand with valuation? So first of all, in terms of the businesses, are they different businesses from where they were a week ago?
Yeah.
Well, not that I can tell.
No.
So it's not that. Okay, so there's been no regulatory interference. There's been no new competitor arrive. There's been no financial news from any of them. Quite frankly, there's been no trading statements. Is their long-term earnings potential perceived to be what it was a week ago? Presumably. So then you got to ask yourself, well, why has it happened? Is it because Tesla didn't go in the S&P 500? Is it because the Fed's balance sheet's not growing? Is it because people are worrying a little bit about the pandemic, although these stocks are perceived to be immune from that? Is it because this derivative story that Zero Hedge and the Financial Times have covered so expertly about SoftBank pumping these stocks up through derivative transactions?
Yeah.
I mean, there are multiple possibilities. The one thing that we do know is that if it is the top for these stocks, nobody's going to ring a bell, right?
No, nobody
ever does. And I guess you've now got to ask yourself, if you are involved in these stocks, why were you involved in them? Is it because you genuinely believe they're long-term winners, they deserve a premium valuation because they're capable of growing another company? Then frankly, why aren't you buying on the dips unless you're fully invested? Because the situation hasn't changed, the stocks have got cheaper.
Yeah.
If you were piling in just because you thought everybody else was piling in and it was a chance to sell the things on for a bit of a quick turn, because you probably need to have a bit of a look at yourself, because now you've got a big decision to say, because if you didn't really, you know, plan on owning these things for a long time in the first place, you've now got a more difficult situation. And, you know, and that's just a classic example of the old Buffett quote about, you know, a pack of lemmings make Wall Street look like rugged individualists when it gets a concept between its teeth. And the concept has been growth and paying a premium for that. So now you've got to ask yourself, okay, valuation. And there, these six stocks are on the last count. I've got them on about, based on consensus earnings from Zacks, in aggregate, they're on about 40 times forward earnings for this year and 33 times for next year. The S&P 500's on about 22 times for this year, dropping to 17 times, and similar earnings per share growth rates next year, about 25% from both. And they're about 7 times sales for this year and 6 times sales for next year. Now, you might feel comfortable with that, in which case, hang on. You know, you think these companies, their competitive moats is so firmly entrenched, they're going to be very difficult to dislodge. Fine. The question that you obviously need to bear in mind is that what does paying 40 times earnings for something actually mean? Well, it means if the net income stays flat, it's going to take the company 40 years to give you your money back in earnings.
Yeah.
40 years.
I don't know if I'll be.
I think that's a big call. Now, clearly, the assumption is their earnings aren't going to stay flat.
Yeah.
But that's the underlying assumption, is if their profits stay where they are today, and they are phenomenally profitable companies, the law of large numbers is going to get to be a problem from the end, you're going to have to wait 40 years. Or put it another way, 7 times sales. Okay, so assuming these companies give you all of their revenues as dividends, which, let's face it, is impossible because they have costs and taxes and goodness knows what else to pay,
Yeah. It's
going to take you 7 years to get your money back.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that's wrong, I'm just saying you've got to be aware of, you've got to be very, very confident that earnings aren't going to disappoint. You've got to be very, very confident that the regulator's not going to stick their nose in. And I think the other thing that you probably need to be confident of in some ways is that the economic backdrop, the broader market backdrop, isn't going to change from where it's been in the last decade, which is low growth, low rates, low inflation, therefore huge scarcity premium for these companies, because they've been capable of growing through almost pretty much anything. So if, and it's a big if, there's a vaccine, and that gives people confidence, the economy really starts to fire on all cylinders, I wonder whether these companies are going to be quite so highly bid, because they're seen as pandemic immune. But if you don't need to buy things that are immune from the pandemic, because there isn't one, that scarcity premium may ever weigh a little bit, at least in the short term. And the biggest game changer, I think, is what potential game changer is what we've discussed before, which would be, heaven forbid, if there's actually inflation. Now, you may have missed it because you were sunning yourself, but the Federal Reserve last month said that, or this month said that it's not looking at 2% inflation anymore, what it is, but on an average basis. So if you get a period of 0% to 1% inflation, it's happy to let inflation run at 4 coming out the other end to kind of balance things up. Now, I'm not sure that's necessarily how I would like it to be looked at, because if, you know, you sort of, as somebody said to me the other day, well, if you undercook the turkey and then put it on blast and incinerate the damn thing, it doesn't taste any better, does it? So I think you've probably got to be a little bit careful there. But if they are prepared to let inflation run hot, and if they're capable of getting it there, and with huge amounts of fiscal stimulus, complementing monetary stimulus, who knows? Then frankly, again, if there's lots of inflation and a recovery, there'll be lots of growth lying around. Lots of companies, cyclicals, values, financials, will be growing their top line and their profits. You'll be able to pick up growth in the street at very low valuations rather than relative to the very high valuations you're paying for rare earnings growth right now. So that's the biggest game changer you could probably get for tech, and it wouldn't even be their fault if they started to underperform. It doesn't mean the share price is going to go through the floor, but I wouldn't want to be caught saying that. But equally, you would expect things value to outperform under that scenario. And you are seeing at the moment some of these heavily shorted, really clapped out, heavily bombed out stocks in the UK, like, God forbid, Hammerson or Royal Mail or Cineworld. They're actually rallying quite hard. You know, they are all right, they're very volatile, but they're rallying a little bit in the past couple of days. Whether that's just a technical thing or the first signs of what you can look at is, you get Fred, the St. Louis Federal Reserve database, and type in five-year forward inflation, And market inflation expectations are back at about 1.9%, which is the highest they've been for 6 or 7 years. Fed will be quite happy with that because it's bang on target of 2. But inflation expectations have been creeping higher just when these tech stocks have started to wobble. So let's see what happens.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think one of the most sensible arguments is the rotation of, like I say, of money from these growth companies to value plays now, because they've been unloved for so long, some of these value plays, and the valuations on these tech companies are so high. I always keep thinking of it, the old kettles used to get the boil and then the whistle and the steam. Sooner or later, steam's got to come out. You know, when it's that hot, it may take a lot longer to boil than you think, but steam has to come out of it sometimes sooner or later. But rotation is probably the way forward. And at the end of the day, you know, like I said. Look at it. You know, I wouldn't be buying here. It's not a good place to buy, is it? Right?
I would be uncomfortable. I mean, I admit I didn't think they'd get to where they are, so you're probably listening to the wrong person, but I would be very uncomfortable buying them right now, personally. Yeah. And in the end, all of the things that we know about them, we know they're phenomenal companies with deep moats. That's kind of known. And as Jim Grant said, investment is all about getting people to agree with you later.
Yeah, yeah.
Does that make sense? Yeah, you don't want them to agree with you now because you're all on the damn thing. So where's the incremental buyer coming from? You want people to disagree with you now and agree with you later, because that's when they're coming around to your point of view by either buying or selling. And so buying if you're long and selling if you're short, so, or you're at least you're underweight or not involved. So I think in that respect, we know these, they are amazing companies, but you're not telling me anything that we don't necessarily know under those circumstances. So I think there's a bit of a, obviously, the consensus view is that they're phenomenal and they're valued accordingly. So, and if there is, heaven forbid, and there's any minor earnings disappointment, then there really are very few places to hide. And that's when you would find out that other old saying of markets go up the escalator and come down in the elevator.
I
suspect.
Well, do you know what? I was just looking at the jobless claims in America and all that stuff, and initial claims and continued claims. So the peak of continued claims, which is obviously the net figure, there was 24.9 million unemployed, which is right around about the 9th of May. Mm. Now they're down to 13.3. So 11.5 million people have gone back to work since the initial thing. So it's so it seems like it's going in the right direction, doesn't it? All Trump is praying for now, he's probably doing more than praying actually, is getting a vaccine before the vote, I think, when it comes out.
Or something that's close to it anyway. So I mean,
so then he can claim it's his success.
Yes. Well, you know, obviously Bob Woodward's given him the shoe pie this week, hasn't he, in that book? So I think from multiple reasons all politicians are praying. But it's interesting, there's a fascinating interview with the Swedish epidemiologist Anders Tegnell in the FT today. And he says, this is a complex situation, there is not going to be one single solution. So he said a vaccine would be great, but don't rely on it being the silver bullet, as it were, because he said it's just much more complex than that. I know he's not everybody's cup of tea, and some people like what he's doing in Sweden and some people find it absolutely terrifying. But at the moment, the cases in Sweden, the ratios are looking pretty good compared to now they're looking better than where their Nordic peers are, and a lot better than a lot of other European countries that we can think of as well, intriguingly. But he says that he's not doing a lap of honour, because he says we've got to get through autumn winter, and that'll be the big test of whose approach may prove to be, because then after that you're a year into the thing, right? Once we come out of winter, we're a year in, and then he says we'll start getting a little bit of a better feel for whether the Swedish model or the lockdown model, the full lockdown model and so on, was proving to be the right approach.
I know one thing. I think this year will be one we'll look back on and think that was a mad year. Absolutely. Stopped. I mean, even now, looking back at when, all these people were doing sort of videos on lockdown, seemingly, I got this sort of inertia, sort of or jealousy, where people were doing, being very creative online in lockdown. I just carry on doing my normal stuff, and everyone's locked down. But even now, that seems like a while back, But it was a very odd situation back then.
In theory, I'm going into the London office next week, so first time since March. The office is opening at a third capacity in London. I mean, Manchester's been running open a slightly lower capacity for a while, but London is officially welcoming people back in next week. So
have you got one of the big anti-chemical suits on with the big masks and all that stuff?
I think I have a suit and a shirt and a tie as usual, I'd imagine, Justin. Yeah, you know, exactly. And I have my face mask in my pocket for the trip. Yeah. I gather it's going to be really hot next week, which is a bit of a disincentive to get on the train and put... and get togged up, but I'm keen to give it a go. Much as I love my little home office in which I'm sat right now, I am quite keen to try and see somewhere a little bit different at least.
It's all changed. Well, it's different, but it's back to the new normal, I suppose. But there we are.
Yeah, I mean, I've got friends who work in London. They said the tubes are slowly getting busier, but they're still much more like they would be between Christmas and New Year than they would be, you know, during a normal sort of normal rush hour times.
Cool. Thanks for us. Speak next week.
Take care.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five. Greatland Gold up 4.75% and 19.9 pence. At three, Omega Diagnostics. Good run this week from those guys. ODX ticker at 74.5 pence, up 0.68%. At three, Supply Atme Capital. Non-move at 0.5. At two, TT Electronics, TDG is ticker there, down, 0.4%, 1 pence, 266. And at one, Iconic Labs, another good performer this week, up 11.11% to 0.0175 pence. Okay, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, 88 Energy, of course, Dave Wall on the podcast, final petrophysical interpretation, read Charlie 1. At four, it is Fast Forward Innovations, Investee Company Update, Juvenescence Limited. At three, again, it's Fast Forward again, Investee Company, Portage Biotech. At two, it is Strategic Minerals, Lee Creek Copper Mine Update. And at one, Zaim Credit Systems, Quarter 2020 Trading Update. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.